Hey, you guys, welcome back to the Sonia Tompkins podcast. I am your host, Sonia Tompkins, and this episode is what I'm going to start calling a of the moment episode, which means there's something going on in the news or in the world that I think is relevant to you guys, and I want to share it with you. So it's of the moment, it's off the cuff, and it's totally unedited. So today's episode, you guys, I'm going to be explaining and talking about the closure of Payless shoe stores nationwide. Okay, if you guys have not seen or heard, Payless shoe stores are closing all of their locations nationwide. And I've got some things I want to share with you about that. So number one that we're going to discuss, I'm going to share with you, is why the end of Payless is not a bad sign for brick and mortars. I really want to dive deep into that. So we'll touch base on that. We'll talk about how to prevent, this type of mass closing or kind of end of a business legacy, how to prevent that from happening, to your business, whether you are just getting started or you've been in business for a little while. There are things you can do to make sure that you don't end up, or your business legacy doesn't end up like Payless in the next, 30 years or 20 years. And then three, how you can score big. So this is really exciting. I always love to share with you how you can maximize your budget for your boutique spending and expenses. That's my jam. I love that. So I'll be going there. So anyway, I'm saying all that to you guys to say, hey, get comfortable, plug this into your car, Bluetooth speakers if you're driving, grab your earbuds if you're on the train, whatever you need to do, stick it in your pocket because you don't want to miss any parts of this episode. All right, so let's jump right into it. So for those of you, if you have never heard of, if you're one of my younger listeners, if Payless, like if you're kind of like Paris Hilton, where you're like, Walmart, what's that? I've never heard of Walmart. If you're like Payless, what's that? I've never heard of it. Well, Payless shoe stores have been around for a long time. I'm soon to be 41, and I believe Payless kind of came on the scene, or at least it became a known place on the scene for me and my age group, probably when I was around somewhere between 5 and 7. Okay. So, you do the math. That's at least 35 or so years, and Payless has been around. Okay. Their business model typically, or originally I should say, was more for, just casual, casual, to moderate priced items, so they were branded sort of like a family shoe store, for people who didn't want to spend a lot of money on their shoes. But actually back in the day, you guys, when they first started, they actually had some pretty decent shoes, especially again, for a family, for someone buying shoes for children, multiple children. Granted, everything has gotten a little bit flimsier over time because people are like so focused on more money, less quality. But back then, Payless did have decent shoes. I'm going to specifically say like tennis shoes and sandals. Never was a fan like of their dress shoes. I don't like slick bottoms, it's a whole situation. I digress though. So that's a little background on Payless, and you can Google to find more, accurate stats on Payless, once you're done listening to this podcast. But anyway, that's kind of who they were marketing to, families with, children, at really easy to, buy price points. Okay. And yeah, they're closing all of their stores. Now, a few years back, like 3 years back, they kind of went through this thing where they closed a lot of their stores. But they still had kept some open, from what I could tell, at least quite a few in their mall locations. And if you ask me, I think that was kind of really where they have gone wrong. But I have a lot of opinions about that. So let's just jump right in to my first point, because I want to share a lot with you guys, but I don't want to keep you too long either. So let's talk about number one, why the end of Payless is not a bad sign for brick and mortar boutiques. So anytime some large, department store or business you know, nationwide, they closed down. Everyone kind of gets a little antsy and anxious, like, oh, see, this is why you need to be online. This is why I'm going to start online. Online, online, online. And you guys have heard me talk about this before. I don't care where you start your boutique. I don't care if it's online or if it's a brick and mortar or if you do both. But there is a place for both of these business models, you guys. And the future continue, you know, the research and everything continues to show that the issue is not you have a physical location. That is not the issue. That is not why all these major companies are closing. They are closing, you guys, because they have not adjusted to the way consumers want to shop now. They just haven't. They've had a really hard time doing that. And old habits, even for corporations, die hard. So let that in itself be a lesson. So here's why it's not a bad sign for brick and mortars, you guys. It's, you know, there was a time when every store, every retail store was quote unquote a boutique, you know, or a brick and mortar, a standalone. You didn't have malls, you know. 70 years ago, there were not shopping malls. You know, shopping malls came into play when they got big into this whole suburban housing craze, like in the late 60s. And then shopping malls just exploded in the 80s. And it was thought of as being a very good idea. It was great. Have all these stores in one concentrated area. But then from that spawned, you know, so many like mass produced and mass, you know, spawned retailers and everybody kind of was just doing the same thing as everybody else, trying to get that same dollar. And that's why malls became unpopular. And that's why a lot of these stores that built their, or took their business model from being standalone stores or in small shopping plazas and going into these malls. Those are the retailers that you see closing left and right, you guys. And it's not because nobody wants to get up out of their pajamas and go shopping. I mean, that's part of it. But there's a whole huge sector of the population who that's kind of their way to go shopping, even though they may not like it. Even though it's not the most convenient, it's just their way. And I personally, I'm that person. So, and there are millions of other people like me. And there's certain things that you can get by shopping in person that you just can't duplicate online. And research data has shown that over and over again, you guys. Just look at Amazon, who started online, who's like one of the largest, if not the largest, online retailer in the world, and they're opening brick and mortar. So again, this is not a debate about which one is better. That all depends on your business model and the goal you have for your boutique. But it is to show that it's not because they're physical space. So don't put that into the equation where you're like, oh, okay, see, I shouldn't do a brick and mortar, or is my brick and mortar going to suffer? Because if Payless or The Limited, if they can't make it, you know, how am I going to survive? Let me tell you something. It's quite the opposite, folks. This is your time to shine. The quicker these big box giants get out of the way, you know, the more room you have to shine and sparkle as an independent retailer. So I find every time these big stores shut down, I mean, unless it's Target, if Target shuts down, y'all, I'm going to need a whole therapy session. But these other people, like, seriously though, this is your time to shine, to sparkle, to show the world the diamond in the rough that you've been this entire time, because it takes out, you know, it takes out this feeling, oh, well, let me go here. You know what? People are getting tired of that mass produced feeling, effect, and all that. And this is really your time. So if you're a shoe boutique in particular, if you've been wanting to open up a shoe store and you want something for, you know, your market is similar, or if you want to sell children's shoes and this was, you know, you guys share same market, I'm telling you, this is your time. Don't let that make you afraid. Let this empower you. Yeah, for real though. So, and then number two is, how do you, you know, you're like, okay, Sonia, I hear that, that's cool, but how do I keep from ending up being that same, you know, in 15 years? How do I prevent myself or my business from being that? And the answer to that, you guys, is two things. The reason why Payless suffered and ultimately, I believe, had to shut their doors, all their doors, is because there were some changes that went on in the economy. And then there were some changes that they wanted to do with their brand. And they did not execute it in the best way possible. So again, remember now, Payless starts off as a family-friendly brand with price points that are very easy to overcome and say yes to the purchase, right? And then somewhere around like the early 2000s, they decided they were going to do a slight change in their brand, which they're allowed to do. And they brought in, you know, like independent designers. Like if you guys watched any of the cycles of like America's Next Top Model, and like Christian Siriano was one of the designers. Well, a year after, you know, his stint on the show, he became an independent designer. He was designing for the Met Gala. He got a contract with Payless. He started designing shoes for them. Let me just tell you, those styles were really cute. I mean, there were some years there in the, you know, mid 2000s where Payless, I mean, the styles themselves were really nice. I mean, they looked really nice. I have very, very high arches in my feet, so I can't do Payless shoes, but I tell you, there were times where I would envy because my sister, she would get some really cute things from there. I'd be like, wow, really? That's Payless? So they had that going on. Well, the problem with that whole new rebrand or attempt at rebranding was that they were trying to play the field, you guys. They were trying to bring in this new feel, these new looks, which looked really good, people really liked, but what it was doing was it was confusing their market, because those people who were used to Payless being a place that they could go and, you know, buy a pair of shoes, you know, for $20-ish or something, you know, all of a sudden you're seeing shoes for, you know, $45, $59. And I'm going to just tell you, if I have a choice between going to Dillard's or Macy's or even DSW or going to Payless in terms of, okay, I need to buy a pair of shoes, these are my three choices or these are my four choices, because we're all in the same price point, I'm probably not going to pick Payless. And I think that's what happened. So those people who were used to those easy to buy price points were then turned off because they're like, wait a minute, Payless is getting high. I'm not trying to do that, you know? And then the people that they were now targeting, that they were drawing in with these designer, you know, this influx of like designer styles or looks from independent designers and such, they would go, but it's still like, you know, but that's not the bulk of their merchandise. So unless I'm going for that specific pair of Christian Siriano designed shoes, you know, which a lot of people did, but if you're just, oh, I'm going to go shoe shopping, and you're more of the medium, you know, the moderate to higher end customer, Payless is not your go-to destination because they've not branded themselves like that fully to you. So what they did, again, you guys, is they were trying to play the field. And this is why I talk so much about, you know, I know we want to try to have something for everyone, but this is a great example of why it doesn't work. You've got to, especially when you're just starting off, you guys, you've got to pick one or two and really work the heck out of that so that you can really solidify yourself as being the go-to place for that particular customer or market and dominate that. And then maybe look at expanding and adding to it, which kind of leads into, you know, I mean, back to, you know, that's how you can prevent that. If you just stick to one or two things and just really be good at that, I promise your return is so much quicker. You know, forget that whole 5-year business model before you start to see a profit. That goes out the window when you're targeted, when you're niched, when you're small, and then grow smartly based on the needs of your customer base, like totally. So Is it bad that they were trying to change their brand? Absolutely not. Like, businesses are just like people. We grow, we expand. We're not the same people. Your business is not going to be the same business it is now in 40 years. Why? Because you're not the same person, you know, unless you're, you know, if your dream and goal is to become more of a franchise, you know, then yeah, you will have designers, you will have buyers, you know, and if you're dedicated to young, trendy shoppers, when you're 60, you're not going to have the same taste as a 20-year-old. And so then you would hire, you know, buyers who are young, 20-ish trendies, and they would be able to replicate that over and over, you know, for the next generation of young 20 trendies, if that's who you were catering to. But if this business is your business and you're like, okay, I don't foresee myself looking to go into that route, then, you know, your business is going to change. So yeah, you can expand, you can grow. But when you change your brand over, what you need to do is you need to do a hard left. Like, when you decide to change your brand over, you need to make a definite left turn and make it very, very clear, very decisive to your market and to the people that you're now trying to attract that, hey, we've done a 360 and we are now doing this over here. When you're trying to keep your toe over here, but then I'm gonna kind of dip it over in this pond at the same time, you know, the waters from pond A and pond B get intermixed and muddy, and then you have a Payless debacle. Okay, we'll call it that, the Payless effect. So we don't want that. I don't want that for your business. So definitely keep those things in mind. And when, you know, this is why, another reason why you really should start off with a very clear foundation. It's one of the things I help my clients with from day one. I don't care what they come to me with. I don't care if they've been in business for 10 years. First place we're starting is customer avatar and business mission. Because if those things are off, you're going to be changing your tune, so to speak, every, you know, year, every 6 months, because, well, no, I think I'm going to carry, you know, I think I want to carry this now, and I think I want to carry that now. And when you move about like that, you're confusing any base that you might have built up. So yeah, when it's time to make a change, do a hard left and make it very, very clear, or just stick to your market if that's working for you. So now here's probably what you guys have been waiting on. Like, what are my tips? What do I suggest? What can you do to score big with this unfortunate closing of stores by Payless? So this is where you might want to take notes or pause me, come on back, and be ready to take notes. So if you are a new or if you are an aspiring boutique owner and you maybe in the next 6 months to a year, you know, you're going to have a brick and mortar location and you're going to need things like fixtures. This is good times, y'all. And believe me, it's not going to be just Payless. So this time of the year, I've talked about it before on some blog posts, but this time of the year, the January through March is when, in these malls especially, you will see all these retailers that are closing. They've done their fiscal year, it ended, they got through the holidays, and now they're going to be shutting it down. Whatever's not working, they're going to get rid of it. And Payless is no different. They're liquidating all of their assets, including their fixtures. And this is big for you. So if in the next 6 months to a year, you know, or feel like you're going to have a physical location, it is time to find someone with a pickup truck, or go rent you a small U-Haul van and let's get to buying. So here's what I would suggest. There are certain things that each store is going to have. And to me, they're really not worth you buying used unless you're just getting a heck of a deal. The first thing you want to know is that you want to have cash. A lot of stores, some of them that liquidate, they will take credit card if you're doing a lot of, you know, like if you're purchasing, you know, 30% of their fixtures and something like that. Sure, credit card, they'll take it. But it's no different. If you have cash, you have a little bit more negotiating power. When you go into your local Payless this week, because yeah, the early bird definitely is going to get the worms here. So if you're listening to this on the first day I release this episode, it'd be Monday, February 18th. You need to be going to Payless right now. But when you go ask to speak to the person who is handling the liquidation sales, you don't want to talk to Judy, the regular sales girl who's sweet and cute, and that's cool, but Judy probably is not going to be the best person you can negotiate with, store manager or the person handling the liquidation sale. All right, so you get there, bring cash. Cash is king. Everyone loves cash. Number three, inspect your items. All right. I'm going to tell you right now the items that I think are going to be most beneficial for someone to purchase versus some things that you could probably buy new for not too much more cost. So used, cash wrap desk. So a cash wrap, that's basically the counter, the area where the cash register is, and where they keep any kind of supplies that they might have related to packaging up your products when a customer was shopping with them. Why do I suggest the cash wrap counter? Because these things are expensive as you know what. Like cash wraps typically can run anywhere from about $800 for a very small one, new, and they can go up from there. So one of the things about Payless in particular is most of their cash wraps are white, which is really good. So it's pretty universal and can work for most of you guys' stores. I always recommend that fixtures are either in a natural color, a natural wood type of finish or color, black or white. And when at all possible, stick to one color scheme with your big furniture pieces or fixtures. All right. So they're white. The cash wrap desk is a must if you don't have one, if you've been needing one for your current boutique, or again, if you know you're going to have one, a location in the next 6 months to a year, snag it. What should you be paying for that used? Depends on the condition of it, but I would say if it was in pristine, perfect condition, I would say like $200, $250, you know, and again, it depends on the size and there's some variables there, but you shouldn't be paying $500 for a cash wrap desk. That's crazy. If it has, drawers and slots in the back of it, which they should for the bags to go in, you guys, I'm telling you, cash wrap desks are huge and you need to have one. It's one of those pieces of furniture that you're like, oh, it's not really cute though. But it's functional, and when you're doing multiple transactions, in every hour, it's going to be useful. So cash wrap desks are a great piece to grab during a liquidation sale. The other pieces that I'm going to tell you are what they call nesting tables. So nesting tables can come in a variety of styles. So they can literally be traditional nesting tables where they have four legs, a tabletop, and they come in varying heights. So you might have one that's like 2.5, 3 feet tall, and then one that's like 4 feet tall, and one that's 6 feet tall, right? Those are great. The other kind of nesting tables look like cubes. They look like solid. They have four sides to them and they're solid. But basically a nesting table is something that you can place product on the top of, and they usually have varying sizes of these. You can put them together to create flow throughout your store. You can put them together to show to kind of give your visual displays dimension and show multiple products and looks, or you can use them individually and spread out through your store to create flow of traffic through your boutique, which is very important. That's something I should do a whole podcast episode about that later. You guys, let me know in the comments if I should do that, if you guys want to know about that. But nesting tables are great. Those are also item that can be rather expensive if you buy brand new. So again, look at the condition of them. Look for things like, they're usually made out of MDF with a laminate covering on them. So again, they're probably white, and they have a white laminate finish on them. So what you want to look for is on the corners and around the foot area, the floor area, make sure that they don't have like rips. Because sometimes if it's, especially on corners, that they get bumped a lot by people walking by, and over time, if that laminate finish gets pulled more and more and it's broken off, then that MDF board underneath is exposed and it's pretty ugly and it's not very easy to fix or cover. So I would be looking for those things, and I would be negotiating prices on the nesting tables. And depending on the size, I would say anywhere from $30 to about $100 per table if they're the really long, wide ones. So those are also good to have. Now, I do want to stop here and say, some of you who are not open yet, you may be saying, well, I don't know how big my store is going to be. How do I pick this stuff if I don't even know what my space is looking like? Let me tell you something. You're not going to go wrong with this, because whatever you get that you don't use, you can turn around and put on Craigslist or your Facebook marketplace and resell it for what you pay for it very easily, because these are items people who are starting businesses are always going to be looking for, okay? So another great thing are the accessory display. So what I like about this is that if you have a boutique business that is primarily accessories, and or at least, yeah, I'd say 40% of your inventory is going to be accessories, and you sell them in bulk. So it doesn't mean, I'm not talking about those who sell like statement pieces. You know, I have two of these. I have one of these. I have two of those. That's actually how I did my accessories. But I'm speaking more of if you have a setup where you sell, okay, these necklaces sell very well, so I've got eight of these. I've got eight of these. I've got 12 of these. Then that accessory display is going to be good. The one that has a slat wall. So there's a slat wall. This accessory display, I noticed that a lot of Paylesses have. Those are great because you can actually put shelves on those. They have these arms, that metal arms that you can use. You can put hooks on there to actually have the, if your necklaces or earrings are on cards with a hole in the center, so you can display those there. Small things like belts, you name it. Those are great to have if that's your model. If you're doing more statement pieces and you really want to show the details of each statement piece, I always just like the stand-up jewelry or necklace display cards for that. Okay, cool. So make sure you add that to the list. Now, for my shoe boutique owners, or those of you interested in selling shoes, what should you be getting? The footstools, the little seats where you sit down and you can try the shoes on. You want to be buying those, okay? Even if the color of the upholstery seat doesn't match what you, you know, your decor, that's an easy fix with recovering just the seated part, all right? Those are like must-haves. I feel like if you have a shoe boutique, or if shoes are a good ratio to your inventory for your boutique. The other thing, the socks, the little footies for people to try on, grab them, get them. Those should be like pennies on the dollar. Seriously, grab them. They're going to be useful to you later. Tissue paper, stores that have tissue paper, grab it. That's always a good buy. You'd be surprised how much tissue paper can cost. And then lastly, mirrors. So if you're in need of a mirror or mirrors, those are always good to get. There is a difference, you guys, between a very good mirror and a cheap mirror. Cheap mirrors make the body look disproportionate for some people. It's distorted, and a really good mirror won't do that. So mirrors are always a good thing to pick up at liquidation sales, such as the Payless closing. So you guys, I feel like I'm out of breath, like I ran a marathon or something. But anyway, I hope that this has been really helpful to you, especially those of you who are aspiring and you're like, ooh, because I'm telling you, this can really save you a lot of money in your budget. My very first business, which was a hair salon and day spa, you guys, I saved about $20,000 because I was able to buy my fixtures from a liquidation sale. So definitely don't sleep on it. If you're working a 9-to-5 when you get off work or doing that lunch hour, head over to your nearest Payless. And you can request things to be on hold. You can say, here, they won't hold it if you don't pay for it. But if you're like, hey, I'm going to pay for it and I can get a truck here in the next 2 days or what have you, you know, let that be known. Don't let that be a deterrent. Don't wait till you have the truck and everything in place. Just go ahead and secure it, pay for it, and yeah, you should be good to go. I'd love to hear what you guys think about this episode in the comments. Let me know if you do this. We want to know, we want to see. So make sure that you give us your piece down below. Also, if this is your first time listening and you liked it, feel inclined, make sure you subscribe to this podcast and like it. Share it with those who you know who are starting a boutique. All right, you guys, I'm getting out of here. I'll see you next time.